CliffCentral.com.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. What's happening? So, here we are on a Monday morning. I got some decent sleep last night. I'm thrilled about that. And it's raining in Johannesburg, which in winter is unheard of. It hardly ever happens. I mean, I'm not making this up, right? It never really happens.
Well, it's not meant to, but then, you know, the El Niños and Niñas and whatevers.
They screwed with everything.
Spanish rain gods, basically.
Exactly.
The lesser-known gods of the Mediterranean area.
Spanish rain gods, yeah. Anything with a Spanish name is probably going to have a bad effect on our weather. That much we know to be true.
Which means that El Tráfico is now much more intense.
Yeah, driving in this morning, you know, people lose their minds when it rains. They just are not capable of driving normally. If you just apply the same rules you would if it was clear, you idiot.
It's horrific out there.
It is. It's a disgrace. And people, everyone slows down, they're braking every second. It's very bad. It ruins the whole flow.
I was telling Ben this morning that when it rains, it messes up everything. It delays everything. You wake up, you decide if you actually want to get out of bed. That wastes another, like, 3 minutes.
Well, I got straight out of bed because I heard this water noise. And I was like, oh, shit, there's a leak or something.
The keys
right?
gone.
Yeah. And then I look out of the window and I saw rain. I thought, what? It's raining?
So
it's been a couple of months since we saw some rain.
Imagine if your alarm at night figures out that it's raining and then sets it back like an extra 10 minutes. So you wake up 10 minutes earlier so you get to work at the same time.
Yeah, in other words, they should figure out a way of programming for rain.
Yeah, rain, weather, snow, anything.
Right.
A freak tornado at night.
Right.
Even traffic. Imagine if it could like pinpoint where an accident was.
Well, it's already, we're getting there with that. That's not so far-fetched. Ah, Mabale Monoi. She also was caught up in rain traffic. Just call it what it is. Ah, how was everybody's weekend? What did you get up to, Ben?
Gareth, it was dreadfully cold and it was the worst sporting weekend since I've had facial hair.
Which is a long time now.
It's bloody dreadful. It was god awful. And then Sunday I thought, you know what, I still got golf to go to, but the weather was so horrid that I got to the golf course and my three playing partners were huddled around a fire saying, let's do this some other time.
And you just said, well, let's go home, guys. What did you do?
It's just the weekend that didn't need to happen, I think, in our lives. It was a sad weekend, and obviously with the Orlando shooting and everything, it was just a cuck weekend.
I didn't really pay much attention to this Orlando shooting this weekend. I only saw it in the headlines last night, and I resolutely refuse to watch TV news, to listen to radio news even, and to see what's going on in the Sunday newspapers. It just depresses me too much. It makes Sundays worse. I already hate Sundays. I don't want to feel worse about it. I hate Sundays because it's the end of your weekend, and I get the Sunday blues. A lot of people get this. It's not just me. And those things just make it worse. Carte blanche, I gave up on a long time ago. I might find myself occasionally sitting in front of the TV to watch carte blanche, but mostly I try to avoid it. And I actually go to gym at 6 in the evening on a Sunday.
So it's just you, which is also nice.
Exactly, because there's no one else there. It's dead quiet, which is fantastic. And I can get everything I need done. I start the week in my head on a Sunday night. Then I'm not starting on the Monday morning. And Sunday night, I get a good night's sleep. I mean, I don't want to see anyone on a Sunday anyway, right? So it's not like I have to do things on a Sunday.
So on a Sunday, you are in denial.
I'm totally in denial, and I'm totally flying solo on a Sunday. It's the best day of the week from that point of view. I do love it. You just get to sit and be on your own. You watch some TV or you watch you watch some kind of show, it's something, and then you go to sleep. It's beautiful.
So you don't even touch Facebook on a Sunday?
I might.
Because that's where it's going to hit you with news, whether you like it or not.
Well, that's where I saw it, because I didn't watch TV news. I don't read the newspapers. And I'm not doing that. That's not willful ignorance, by the way. I'm not sticking my head in the sand because I hate willful ignorance. What it is trying to make my Sunday a little bit more pleasant than it would need to be if I were a news hound. But yeah, you can't miss it. And it was all over Facebook. So it turns out, I mean, Mubs will give us the details on this one, and maybe Ben, because you guys have been watching the story as it unfolded. I don't know the first thing. Apparently it's a gay nightclub, and some Islamic terrorist came in and like shut up the place. One quote I saw that was very disturbing was the investigators are going through the club now. There are all these bodies lying all over the place, right? And they have to actually tune out the sound of the cell phones ringing.
That is so sad, huh? That's the saddest thing.
Because all the relatives, obviously, who are anxious to find out whether their relatives are okay, are phoning these phones. And these dead people obviously aren't answering them, so they're just ringing nonstop from people who are trying to get hold of them. And the bodies are still lying there, and you can tell it's like frantic mothers and brothers and sisters, and, you know, it's just, to me, that makes it so human.
But that's the thing, when you work in this industry, you're looking to do good. But, I mean, it always comes back to, we had this conversation about policemen in this country as well. Is there sufficient therapy and trauma counseling after this happens?
In this country, hell no.
Because, like,
hell no.
You walk into a nightclub, right? Nightclubs aren't the greatest things to walk into in daylight hours when you're sober.
No.
Now you've got all these dead bodies.
No.
You've just got... It must be one of the most horrifying things you could think of.
Yeah, it's very upsetting. Hey, Mubs, let's switch on your microphone here. Get you settled in. You also sat in horrible rain traffic, right?
I did, but I was playing around with a different wake-up time, and it backfired horribly. So I actually need just to go back to my original plan.
Why the sudden desire to change wake-up time?
No, because... So sometimes I'll get here with anything between 5 and 10 minutes to spare.
Hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, oh, if you could just take that 5 minutes and put it in the sleep.
Sleep, yeah. Oh, I do that.
And then it just backfired,
you know,
horribly.
Suddenly you become the best mathematician in the world when you need 5 minutes more sleep.
Yeah.
And it's 5 in the morning, so you're not even, your brain isn't even fully switched on yet. By the way, I heard yesterday, I was watching a little bit of TV, and there was this TV show about a vet who fixes dogs and cats and rabbits and things when they break their necks or they break their foot or whatever. Amazing guy. So he's doing, I don't know, 12 hours of operations. And then he gets an emergency and he has to do 3 more hours. And the best way, apparently, to wake up is to jump up, spin around anti-clockwise, spin around clockwise, and get your auditory balance system shocked into waking up. It's apparently the same reason if you were falling, you would wake up immediately. And you sometimes dream that you're falling and you wake up immediately, right? Because what it does is it shocks the balance system of the body up and out of its stupor so that you can actually wake up properly. So if you need to wake up, that's apparently the thing to do. Get out of the car or you're on a long trip or whatever it might be, and you actually have to spin around anti-clockwise and spin around clockwise and jump around a little bit just to get those fluids in your middle ear.
Do you have enough energy to do that in the morning?
Well, you've got to try. But I just bring that up because it occurred to me over the weekend. But anyway, you wake up and you're barely awake because your alarm's just gone on. And then suddenly you're thinking, okay, it's 2 minutes past. If I sleep another 3 minutes, then I'll be able to do this and this in 2 minutes. Indeed. And you figure it out. Like your brain is fully switched on to, I need more sleep. Suddenly you can figure out the whole clock.
And especially today, waking up to the rain, because, you know...
That makes you want to go straight back to sleep.
Yeah, it lulls you back into it.
Well, I got up so late yesterday. It was fantastic. Anyway, so yeah, Ben said it's a shitty sporting weekend. We'll get into the story about Orlando and what went down there. And if you have any other things that you'd like to tell us... I mean, it's, you know, this is a two-way conversation. It's not just us sitting here talking nonsense. 0861-555-189. Tell us what you got up to this weekend. Tell us where you were. Tell us who you saw. What else did I do? I had a birthday party on Saturday that I had to go to. And I had, Friday night? What did I do Friday night? Absolutely zero. It was so nice to do that, too.
0.0.
0.0, yeah. So, and you see, because I don't watch sports, I didn't find it a bad weekend at all.
So bad. Like, the depths of humanity came out, and I don't know if any of us can survive going forward, actually. This could be the last Monday that we have.
Really, is that bad, huh?
Yeah.
Anyone know when this cold front's going to end?
You know, it was cold, but it wasn't... I didn't find it so awfully, uncomfortably, shittily cold.
I left the house yesterday at 10 a.m. and it was 5 degrees.
Really?
It was freezing. It got to a high of like 12 maybe in the afternoon.
Oh, wow.
I don't mind it being cold, but the wind, the cold wind just makes it worse.
Yeah, the wind is always the worst. Anyway, why are we talking so much about weather? I mean, I know that weather is an important thing and this cold front's bothering people, but they always say that if you have conversations about weather, it's because you don't have anything to say to each other anymore.
Oh, dear.
Plus winter, you know, that's what happens in winter.
Kind of, winter, it is cold. So I don't know is the short answer, Flax, but it's pretty bizarre that it's raining this morning across parts of Gauteng.
It's very expensive winter. There's like unexpected costs that start hitting you. Like you need to start planning about the extra electricity expenses for putting on heaters now. You got to go buy blankets.
Right.
I'm at the point in my life where I have to calculate whether it's cheaper to go gas heaters or electric heaters. And I have no clue how to figure that out.
Let's do a quick check around the room. Anybody who knows? Pashida, do you know gas or electric?
I have no idea. I'm in the same dilemma as Michael. We need a heater in our house, and I'm also busy calculating.
Electric's more convenient. Gas in the long run is more cheaper, I reckon. But you've got to obviously have the capital outlay of getting a decent gas heater. And then you've got to go to the hardware store to get gas.
Yeah, and that's a pain in the backside.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of people who would describe themselves as DIY guys saying that gas is more cost-effective.
Hmm. All right, but there you go, Flax. You're still going to make the decision. What's more convenient?
In the long run.
You either just pay up the money and plug in the electric heater, or you schlep around gas canisters.
Well, at the moment, what I'm doing is I've loaded prepaid electricity, and I'm seeing how long it takes to finish this month, given that I use the heater, and then see if it works out cheaper to pay 200 rand a week for a gas canister.
Or you could just burn like stuff you don't need in a brazier in the middle of your house.
Well, Flax, I mean, if you're going to have your gas heater on from the time you wake up until the time you go to sleep, that's defeating the purpose of making it cost effective.
It would probably be on for like 4 or 5 hours a day just to keep the room at a constant temperature. Because it's cheaper to run a heater or gas than go to the doctor every 2 weeks because you got flu.
That's one way of figuring it. Okay, all right, I like it. What else did everybody get up to? Tell us what you did. I see that they're making that Roald Dahl movie, Roald Dahl book, the BFG, the Big Friendly Giant. They're making it into a movie. It's already been made. Apparently the premiere is somewhere on the 19th of June or something. Now, I loved that book. Do you remember it? Roald Dahl. I read all of Roald Dahl's books as a kid. I think it had some... I read Roald Dahl, Asterix. What else did I get into? I loved those two. Roald Dahl and Asterix were kind of... They informed me about the world. And Monty Python, you know, I used to listen to their stuff. And to me, that was like the holy trinity of humor and literature. Because Asterix, if you look back at Asterix, not only is it beautifully drawn, but it was funny. It was clever. It taught you really nasty stereotypes about the French and the Romans and the Gauls and the British and the Persians. It was hysterical. I mean, they really made it very, very funny. And it was just magnificently done. Like, I would look at those drawings of Rome that Uderzo, I think his name was, would do as an opening scene for an Asterix story. And you could see buildings in there, and he actually went to the trouble of figuring out what it would have really looked like and drew it like that.
But there were some amazing characters as well in that.
Hmm.
They all had their little parts of play.
I see this BFG is directed by Steven Spielberg, by the way. That's no small thing.
But that's the amazing thing about Roald Dahl's work is that it's kind of timeless. All these stories are being rehashed and re-put together.
Did you ever read The Witches?
Yeah, that was one of the best.
Fantastic Mr. Fox?
Well, that was the movie with George Clooney as the voice.
Right, there we go. I still remember a rhyme from that movie. It just came to me the other day for no reason. There are three bad guys, remember?
Yeah, there was the cider guy. They all had farms.
They all had farms, and this poor fox was trying to live there, and they kept trying to exterminate him and his family.
So it was a cider guy, chicken guy, or was it chicken or turkeys?
It was Bogus, Bunce, and Bean, one fat, one short, one lean. These horrible crooks, so different in looks, were nonetheless equally mean. That's what I remember. And I have not touched that book in, 25, 30 years? Maybe more. So there we go. All right. Enough of the nonsense. We got lots to get into. I think a lot of people want to talk about the news over the weekend. A lot of people want to talk about the sport over the weekend. So we'll get Ben on ASAP with the sport. And tell us if you did something fun. And don't, please, let's not talk about the weather too much. Later on this morning, we've got someone called Siobhan Scallon popping by. She was waiting for this lung transplant. I don't know if you knew about this, but she was actually on with Dr. Cindy last year, desperate for a lung transplant. And she was fortunate enough to get her call on the 30th of September last year. She received new lungs the following day, and she's now doing really, really well. So we'll find out all about her. And we'll speak to Gillian Walker from the Organ Donor Foundation. You know, this is a big thing. Are you an organ donor?
I am.
Mubs, you are.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's very forward thinking. You make yourself useful. You know, if something happens to you and you can't live anymore, your organs are useful to someone else.
Hopefully, I mean,
well,
with all the drinking I've done in my
life. Except your liver. Your liver's going to be thrown away in the trash.
And I'm asthmatic, so I don't know that my lungs are all that useful. Right. I mean, actually, I don't know.
I don't know what they're going to use.
They're
going to sit there and look at you and throw it away.
Once I'm dead, they're going to do a quick scan of my organs and they're going to go, oh, damn it, she's completely useless to us.
But can you not just be a bit more specific than just say I'm a kidney donor, heart donor, pancreas donor, whatever?
Well, how do you know?
Yeah, exactly. But you got a feeling that some organs are going to be more useful than others.
That's probably true.
No, they can't even take my corneas. I've got a cataract in the one. I'm useless.
Oh, my God. You're finished.
I'm
going to throw you away. There's the worst organ donor in the world speaking now. Unbelievable. The Daily Mavericks gathering was on Friday, which was pretty interesting. I didn't tell you about that. As I walked in, I met the ANC Treasurer General, Zweli Mkhize. He's really one of the good guys in the ANC. He's really trying very hard. He's going to be the deputy president, no matter what happens. You know, both sides of the current factions that are sort of warring for the presidency, both of them want him in. And he's a very influential guy. He's very calm and considered. And he had a horrible job because he had to go up there and defend the ANC, which is, you know, it's becoming harder than ever to say nice things about that party. Who else did we have? There was obviously Julius, and I met with him and Buyiseni downstairs. We went and had makeup done because it was broadcast. And he was in very good spirits. You know, he's a very warm, friendly guy. He's also figured out that you just really have to listen to people, and then they think you care. I'm not being horrible. But like everybody wants, especially in this country where we have such a problem, and Father's Day is coming up. You know, Father's Day is the quietest day on Black Twitter. We have Father's Day coming up, and Julius, for some people, I suppose, represents a new father figure because Gedleklekisa let them down so much. So all you have to do is sit and listen. You don't even have to say things. And he's got those big, bright eyes, and he smiles a lot these days. He really is working on public image. And it comes from a very natural, genuine place, I think. I do think he cares about like politics more than any other thing. And it may be for his own interests or it may be for yours, but he's good at mixing the two up so you wouldn't know where the one ends and the one begins.
Now, has he lost some weight?
Yeah, he has. He's looking good.
Yeah, because a lot of people were also commenting on that.
Yeah, no, he's looking good. And speaking of looking good, Buyiseni Ndlozi hates it when you call him the People's Bay. He hates it. He can't stand it. So, in case you didn't know, spoiler alert, don't call him that. He's not going to be thrilled. He doesn't approve of it. He doesn't appreciate it. He doesn't care that people think he's sexy or intellectually rigorous or any of that stuff. He wants to talk about the issues. And they've both agreed to come and talk to us in the next couple of days. So we'll get both of them in. And then I sat with Musi Maimane, and it was me and Musi and Siki Mgabadeli from ENCA. She's also on SAFM, by the way. And we had a nice chat about what he's doing and where the DA is at, and we threw some tough questions at him. Of course, to some people, especially white liberals who are pretending to be more liberal than they are white, it wasn't hardcore enough. You've got to make Musi look stupid in their book so that you can prove your credentials, you know, that you're not whiter than you are liberal. You're more liberal than you are white. There's a whole thing going on there. It's too difficult to comprehend. And luckily, it's not my problem, so I don't care. Anyway, these guys were saying that he handled his questions quite well. And I asked him about party funding. I asked him about whether or not we should have a constituency-based rather than a list-based system, because that's at the core of our problems. And he agreed, and he said, you know what, it's something that they have been talking about in the DA. Imagine if you voted for the candidate in your area, and that candidate actually went to Parliament. In other words, that the people who were put in to important government jobs were people that were voted for by people in that area. That's what should happen, technically. And on the local and provincial level, that's effectively how it should go down. But it doesn't. And there's a list that the party prints, and everybody from 1 to 50 is guaranteed really cool, cushy government jobs. And it's a popularity contest. And those people have no constituency to speak of, because if they ever went to the constituency that supposedly they represent, they would be murdered. They don't belong to that constituency. And as we saw with Des van Rooyen, they actually did burn down his house because they hated him so much. And what does he get? He gets provincial and local government, the portfolio that he's the least qualified to be in. But we still prefer him there to finance. And then later in the day at the Daily Maverick, Pravin Gordhan was on stage. And he actually got really emotional.
About?
He choked up because they asked him, are you safe? Are you okay? Because we hear these stories about people coming to arrest you in the middle of the night and the hawks are after you. And he actually got quite emotional. I've never seen him like that. I felt very bad for the guy. There's a real public servant, and he's just trying to do his job, and the evil plotting and conniving in political circles is making it very difficult for him to do that. I felt very bad for him. There are a bunch of other interesting people there too, and you can find out the whole thing by reading in the Daily Maverick about what everybody thought and how it all went down. You know what to do. And we often include we do it every day. We include the Daily Maverick headlines in cliffcentral.com's newsletter. So you get the best of both worlds. All you need to do is to subscribe by going onto cliffcentral.com and going to join. Everybody's doing it. All the cool kids are doing it. So get in there and join us. All right, when we come back in a moment, we will have a sporting blitz with Ben. And he said it was the worst weekend in sports, so you have to listen, because otherwise you'll miss out on why it was the worst weekend in sport. Plus, Anthea Gardner's in, so we'll look at your money, and we'll find out about everything that's gone on in the news just after that. Ben has got some sport for us this morning. He said it was the worst weekend hashtag ever.
I just, yeah, look at me, I'm deflated before I even get going. It's just too much, Gareth. There's too much to take all this in. Let's start with the Euros then, should we? Because that is something that we don't really care about. And sadly, again, this is a sad weekend. Rioting kind of overshadowed everything. Russia and England had a massive fight. By all counts, Russia won it. And then when they got to the field in the football, they actually drew. So that was 1-1 on the field and 1-0 Russia. So Russia went on aggregate, mostly because there's a guy battling for his life in hospital. Another man has a heart attack, and Montpellier basically is just very dirty right now. So it's so sad when we have these big sporting events. There is some sort of fuck up, right? Whether it be countries rioting or protesting about unnecessary spending of funds on things like this rather than housing and healthcare, all that kind of stuff. The Euros come together, there's just fighting because of thugs. I'm going to try so hard here to get some positivity in this morning's sport.
And then, of course, we have Crooked Hillary.
Yeah, jeez. I mean, I think it's going to be a skill the next few weeks to say nice things about sport. Anyway, France beat Romania 2-1 in the opening match. Albania, they lost to Switzerland 1-0. Wales were very good, 2-1 over Slovakia. As I mentioned, England 1-1 versus Russia. Turkey, they went down to Croatia 1-0. Poland were too good for Northern Ireland 1-0. And then Germany last night 2-0 over Ukraine. Now, another thing that's happening in football right now is the Copa America.
Okay.
Which is a big deal if you are South American, or if you are American and hosting it, not such a big deal. But we've got to the stage now where we're looking at the quarterfinals. So the winners have gone through from the groups. Two out of the four groups have been guaranteed. USA have gone through top of Group A, and they'll take on Ecuador now in the quarterfinals. Colombia finished second after losing to Costa Rica, which is quite a big shock. So they now play against Peru. Okay. So other big shocks here. Brazil are out. In Group B, they lost to Peru, so they're gone. They only got 4 points. Ecuador and Peru have gone through in Group B. America versus Colombia in Group A. Any other groups? Group C, you got Mexico and Venezuela. These two are going to go through because Uruguay, 0 points. Jamaica, 0 points, so they're both out. Mexico now play Venezuela to see who goes through there. Then Argentina, Chile, Panama, and Bolivia. Now, Bolivia are saying they were absolutely robbed over the weekend.
Cause were they?
Well, penalty and injury time. Whether it's a good call or not, when you get a penalty and injury time,
yeah, that team sucks.
Who takes the ball in the back of the nets are going to say they're going to get robbed. Anyway, Argentina, Messi scored 3 goals in about 10 minutes. So they're looking very good. So it's between Chile and Panama, who can get through here? Well, that's going to be the big one to decide those two matches. Sorry, the fate of that. Chile take on Panama, whereas Argentina will take on Bolivia. And then we'll see the quarterfinals, and then we enter the absolute business stage of the Copa America. All those games are on very early morning. So if all that sounded like complete foreign language to you, I can totally agree and understand.
Well, you're deflecting. You're trying to find some interesting sport. I know.
Let's get into it. Okay, so right, Springboks, the Springboks lost to 14 Irish people. And I say Irish people because that wasn't even their strongest team.
How shitty were we, Ben? Give it to me on a scale of 1 to 10. 1 being so dog awful that you might as well go onto the field with crutches in a wheelchair.
I don't even know if we can really score this game, to be quite totally frank with you. It's the first game that this team's come together, right? So combinations, all that kind of stuff. There is a few things to consider, yet they're not excuses. Now, Ireland, if we'd right now, this is actually a really good benchmark where our sport is. In the past, we always thought, you know what, South Africa, we are the second best. We lose to New Zealand, but we'll clap everyone else. Those days are gone. They are gone. The aura of the Springbok is very much also kind of gone and waning. Now, this isn't because of transformation and all these kind of things. There's a multitude of factors here, okay? So the easy low-hanging fruit is you get people saying, oh, I told you, transformation is fucking rugby up. But going into
Mab says that she just saw it devolve into a race war on Twitter.
Going into the weekend, people
took like a second.
Going into the weekend, people were mostly happy with this team, right? Now, we said it, and when this team came up, people weren't going, oh, this is shit. This is just terrible. We're going to get clubbed. Everyone was like, yeah, decent team. Let's see what they can do. The moment they lose, then it's like, oh, this is happening. Oh, I knew this guy was cuck. But that's just, we should pay this no heed, Gareth. Yeah. Anyway, so let's forget about the noise and look at the actual team. There was just, it was just lacking in any sort of logic. You know, the situations weren't getting played. It was a team that literally did come together 2 weeks ago, and it's shown. People were saying that Alistair Garcia wouldn't have had enough time with this team because his announcement as the coach was so late. So you've got a whole bunch of guys who've been playing some pretty average Super Rugby the entire season. Okay, we had two guys come in from overseas who actually were made even worse, that they were quite crap. So we've got an entire squad of guys playing lackluster rugby in a lackluster Super Rugby tournament. Again, I'm not making excuses here. This is kind of where it comes from. The handling errors were terrible. The intensity of the breakdown was shoddy. There was no real attacking intent. They just thought, okay, well, we got a man over. Let's just throw the ball around. There still has to be structure. You still got to hit your basics, right? And that just didn't happen whatsoever. But that's all that needs to be said about the Springboks. What needs to be said here is that the Irish played so bloody well for what they had.
Right.
It was a great lesson for the Springboks to say, you can try to be exciting, all these kind of things. Test match rugby is always that step up. Ireland arrived and they played that step up. The Boxer arrived and they thought they could just play rugby. All sounds very cliched, I know, but this is how these games are won and lost. Irish, it was just incredible to see what they did. And on the Bounce Show today, I'm actually interviewing an Irish guy who called the result. He said, don't be surprised if Ireland win this one because the Boxer aren't as good as they think they are. So I'm between 10 and 11 today. Okay. I'm chatting to Emmett from balls.ie. It's a
balls.
Really great site in Ireland. So it's going to, what this means now is that we have an amazing match coming up this Saturday because the Boxer are hurting a hell of a lot, and all the things come out like this isn't good enough for the jersey and yada yada yada. Anyway, so you've got this, and I really hope that CJ Sunder isn't banned for a whole bunch of time. He probably will miss one match. And even though People are saying the red card that he got was deserved because he jumped after the kick took place against Lambie. Maybe it's true. I don't know. But it just seems a shame that we want to see this Irish team be as good as possible for the second test, because the box need a proper test now. And if they lose it again, well, maybe our rugby isn't a very different spot than we thought it was originally. I'm betting to make sense of all of this because I think a lot of analysis must come after next week. First week out, the guys are a very new combination. If you just look at that back line, it's very, very disjointed right now. You want to pick Damien De Allen because he was the incumbent 12, essentially. Mm-hmm. But he does not gel with Elton Judges. He does not gel with that back line. He's got Lionel Mapu outside of him. He's a dynamic player. It's just so mismatching. It's just, like, this is the difficulty with international rugby. The All Blacks do it very well because these guys know what kind of rugby they're playing. You get South African players together, they're all doing something very different, so it's going to take a little bit longer than the other teams. Again, this is not an excuse. We were shit over the weekend, and the fact we couldn't score a try, no matter how disjointed people were, with 13 people against us, that says a lot about where this team is right now, which is nowhere. So we've got an exciting match, but let's get really critical after that match. If we can hold on, if we can just hold on for one more week, people, we can get critical and throw shit after this next week. In other rugby news, Gareth, New Zealand were pretty good against Wales. Wales were amazing in the first half, but then what always happens against New Zealand, that they'll just kill you in the end. 39-21. Australia, though, they lost to England. 39-28 was the final score to the visitors. What an amazing match that was. And what makes it even worse, that star player David Pocock's out of the series. Mm-hmm. He's got a fractured eye socket. So
That's horrible. A fractured eye socket. That's got to suck.
Yeah. 7 wins out of 7 now for Eddie Jones, the English coach, the Australian guy who told the Stormers to get stuffed. It's an amazing record, and it just shows that England are now very much a powerhouse of rugby game, which is really, really good. And then, yeah, just nothing from the SA-Ireland match. It was 20-26, Ireland winning that one. And next match is at altitude, so South Africa should be favourites to go into that one. But, you know, you just cannot discredit this Irish team, even though they're missing, I think it was 11 out of the starting 15 for the World Cup weren't on the field on Saturday. And they still did it. Lambie will miss the game at Johannesburg because he is concussed. So he's still eating through a straw at the moment. Nice. Argentina, they beat Italy 30-24. That was the other match from the Southern Hemisphere. In cricket, what made the weekend worse was that the Proteas, right? We all love the Proteas. They're the people's team, really. They were doing very well against Australia. Despite a David Warner 100, the bowlers did really well to curtail them to 288. And they were doing pretty good, I must say. They were cruising at 210 for 3, right? Chasing 288. And then, well, yeah. See, the problem with South Africa right now is that from 6 down, people are saying it essentially is a tail. So if you look at the batting lineup, De Kock, he's always pretty good. Umler got a 60 on the weekend. Faf du Plessis back in the mix. He did better well. AB was all right, and then you've got JP Duminy. Okay, so you've got a good top five. It really is. It's solid. The guys are scoring runs. Maybe not kicking on like this should do, but they're creating a platform. But then you've got essentially the tail of two teams. Because then from there, Behardin, yes, he scored a 50 in the last match, and that's great. But when cricket's your only sport, right, and all you do is hit a ball, chances are you're going to come good one of these days, right? You really are. It's like if you're a moderately good-looking person, chances are you're going to wear a good outfit and someone's going to call you attractive. So that's what happens. But Behardin will just go back to where he normally is, single figures, maybe a 20 here or there. And then you've got Parnell at 7 and Abbott at 8. Now, these are key batting roles in one-day cricket, right? Because one-day cricket, Rob Howing actually wrote a really good article about this on Sport 24. Just give it a read. But I totally agree with him. One-day cricket's about taking risks, more so than any other format. So if you've got your tail at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, that's a long way to rely on batsmen because you right. need people who are going to come in and kill the game off, or they're going to save it if anyone fucks up at the top. And we haven't got that, the South African team. And it's just so plain to see that if you get a few wickets early on, you know, paraphrasing the article, of course, but you get a few wickets early on, and this team is going nowhere. From Behardin down, the scores of the weekend, 4-3-1-3-3-6.
Yo, those are bowling scores.
Those are exactly. I mean, that's ball by ball through and over. And the Proteas went on to promptly choke the crap out of that match, and they lost, Gareth. They lost handsomely in the end, which was really, really worrying, considering they had the game in the palm of their hands. They lost by 36 runs. They now play against the West Indies on Wednesday. Australia will play against West Indies today, and this is all at St. Kitts.
All right, so we've got rugby out, cricket out. What else is there?
Well, football, of course, we are out of AFCON. But the hopes weren't particularly high there. So, yeah, it's not looking so good, Gareth. Not looking so good whatsoever. But, of course, when looking for a shining light, what do we have? We've got Wade van Niekerk.
This Wade guy, is the athlete.
Yeah, he's incredible. He ran a 300-meter race. Okay?
Are we going to send this poor bastard to the Olympics and then he's going to get Zika virus?
No, he's this guy's bulletproof. Nothing bad can happen to this guy. Touching wood and all of my limbs. Right. So he ran a 300-meter race, which of course is a very uncommon race, but he is the ultimate sprinter in that this guy is the world's best right now at the 400 meters. He is the only guy in the world to have set the times in the 100-meter, 200, and 400-meter. He ran the 300-meter at this amazing, very competitive meet in Kingston, Bolt was there as well. All the big sprinters were there. And he crossed the line at 31.03 for 300 meters, and he won that one over LaShawn Merritt. This guy is so cool. We should look to, I know cloning is like one of those like evil villain kind of things, but we have to clone people like him. All weekend, we're getting upset about average sports people. We must start,
this guy is doing well.
We must clone this guy. Like, clone lots of him. If someone's playing shit in rugby or cricket, let's get the Wade van Niekerk alternative in there. I know it's a long shot, and it's going to take lots of money, but we're all out of ideas right now. We can't wake up like this as South Africans every Monday morning. We need to start cloning Wade van Niekerk in various forms.
Right.
I think that's pretty much what we need to take out of this. So without being too much more doom and glooming, Ivan Lendl has now joined Andy Murray again.
Oh.
They reunited. Probably two of the most boring people on the face of this planet, so it's a good team. And when Ivan was with Andy won the Grand Slams. He won Wimbledon. He won the US Open. He won Olympic gold when Ivan Lendl was holding his bag.
Oh.
Ivan Lendl then said, "Well, Andy, I can't deal with all this tedious travel," which is a very nice way of saying, "I think you're a boring git and I don't want to spend any time with you. You've also got no mates and it's on to rub off against me." But anyway, Ivan said, "I'll take the challenge. I enjoyed being with the team," and he's going to be back in Andy's corner, which will be even more soul-destroying when Djokovic beats him again. In golf, it is US Open week. Oh, what a week this is going to be. This is when pro golfers toil, just like us hackers, because the golf course is so ridiculously difficult. You battle to find your balls in the rough, let alone hit it out of there.
So this is what people who can't play golf love watching.
It's so great, because these guys really do toil, and that'll be from Oakmont. So it's on the east, kind of the east coast of America, so the time difference won't be as horrific as last year at Chambers Bay, when it was on the West Coast. And obviously this week I'll be giving you all kinds of details around that, everything you might need to know to get into it. And then basketball. Golden State were back. Steph Curry came good. So 108-97 in Game 4. The Golden State Warriors 3-1 up. And then finally, Gareth, Grand Prix action. Yay. Lewis Hamilton's favorite circuit. He does pretty well there. Canada, that is. And he did very well over the weekend as well. So he won that one over Sebastian Vettel. And then Valtteri Bottas came in third. So Hamilton is now just 9 points behind Rosberg. What a turnaround that is. So Rosberg, maybe he shot his bolt too soon. Who knows? But Hamilton's right up his arse in a driving sense. 9 points. Just 9 points. US Open week, and there'll be more crickets. And of course, how are the Bucks going to bounce back? That is the big talking points for this week. Join me 10 a.m. this morning, SA time, while I unpack the whole rugby conundrum right now.
Excellent. All right, thank you, Ben. Sure, so much to be miserable about sports-wise, but let's see if maybe there's a glimmer of hope coming from the money. I'm not going to hold my breath on this one, but it's worth trying. To help us begin to unravel these problems, here is Anthea Gardner.
She looks hard for the money, so hard for it, honey.
We played the whole song on Friday. Didn't you love that? Hang on, let me put your microphone on. We played your whole song.
That was pretty cool, I thought.
Oh, did you like it?
Yes. I particularly went and listened after.
So, what are we looking at?
I'm afraid I don't have that much good news.
It's okay, Anthea. Today is not a good news day. It's raining and storming outside. The world's coming to an end.
Yeah, be happy with the fact that we're even here today. Like, we made it.
Oh, okay. Let's go with that low standard.
Very low hanging fruit.
The bar is so low. Okay. Lower than the snake's ankles this morning.
Oh, dear. All right. So, the Aussie closed 33 basis points lower. Resources were down. Golds were solid, but you know how that works, right? So when the market's a bit nervous, people run to gold. It makes no sense. It's fundamentally flawed.
Stupid.
Exactly. And who knows? It'll probably come off again later on. I tell you what was a bright spark on Friday. MTN. So it was announced on Friday that the fine is going to be 1.67 billion dollars. So we were expecting, or the original amount was,
$5 or $6 billion.
$5.2 billion, right? Mm. So MTN was up at one stage on Friday, 21%.
Wow.
That's just phenomenal, actually. And I think that's why the industrials index was a little bit higher on Friday. It was all to do with MTN. And then it closed at about 13%, so it spiked and then came back a bit, a little bit of profit taking. A lot of people got caught off guard. I was very surprised. So the fine will be paid in 6 tranches over 3 years. Nigeria makes up about 40% of group cash flow for MTN. And I think they are sitting with a significant amount of cash on the Nigerian balance sheet. So you don't need the translation from rands into this naira, because actually the fines in naira, we convert it to dollars to make it easier for us to compare. And then they also said a couple of things. They said that they will voluntarily observe the code of corporate governance, which I thought was funny because I would think as a company, as a listed company, you would have to do that anyway. Mm. I think they're just blowing smoke, the poor Nigerian government.
Yeah.
So they're just trying to be fully compliant. You know, they're trying to say we will abide by our license terms. Don't take our license away. And then secondly, this is more interesting. They said that they will list MTN in Nigeria or the Nigerian Stock Exchange as soon as it is commercially and legally possible. Phuthuman Nhleko, who you know is the stand-in CEO, said on Friday that they had plans to do this all along, which they probably did, but now it becomes more of an urgent thing. MTN is Nigeria's biggest telecom, so it makes sense for the government to want to list them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question now, should we be buying MTN? What do we do now? Depends.
There's so many factors, right?
Exactly. And there's still 3 things outstanding, actually. So if you, whichever metrics you use, more or less, you get to a fair value of 150 Rand. The share is trading at 140 Rand. What's that, a 7% upside? You can get 7% plus in a money market account. So the risk of this company producing, or the share price going to 150 or 200, is too high compared, like the downside risk for me is too high. And the 3 things, they still need a new CEO. They haven't announced that yet. They said they're going to do it by end of June. And of course, the whole, I'm not sure, the second thing, the whole Nigeria thing, the fact that this fine came out of nowhere and that it was so punitive.
Yeah, it smacks of some kind of, like, Nigeria is not the best market to be in if you're looking for stability.
All right.
It's great for all kinds of other reasons, but stability, no.
Yeah, exactly. So this could potentially happen again. So those 2 things. And then the 3rd thing, there is a possible devaluation of the Naira coming. And this is just because of what's happened in the country. They need to devalue to kind of get back or find economic growth, you know.
Right.
In which case, that doesn't help MTN. So
I would say no.
I would say no, yes. No. You can tell.
Just based on those are good reasons. It's too much of a risk.
Yeah.
There are better ways we can spend and make money.
Yeah, I agree. All right. You know, it was a 260 Rand stock a year ago. Eh? It's now 140. Scary.
Well, that reminds you of the vagaries of this whole market. Plus, we've got to look at the fundamentals for these networks. They're really in the data business now.
Absolutely. That is, in fact, where the growth is coming from.
So even though they're making good money, it's all coming out of data. It's not coming out of phone calls. It's not coming out of text messages. And MTN have been scurrilous, along with Vodacom, in trying to petition the government to allow them to almost sideline, and certainly not sideline, but to charge over-the-top rates for WhatsApp and Skype and all these other services that everyone in the world uses for free. So there's a bit of gouging, if you ask me, looking likely in the future of MTN and Vodacom. And if they are, we shouldn't support them.
Yeah. So the growth is definitely in MTN, is definitely coming from data. But I think what you're saying is that margins are going to be under pressure. So what's the point of growing if your margins are shrinking? Yeah. So we'll see that come off. But talk about IT businesses. Naspers reports on the 24th of June.
You know, we had John Madison in here on Friday, who's written this book, and he went into the history of Naspers and how it all sort of came about. And you know, the first picture was this picture of D.F. Malan, who was the editor of the first newspaper Naspers owned.
Oh, wow.
And he took it through, you know, as it went from there into digital television and satellite television, and then all these other digital media assets, and then ultimately Tencent with Chris Becker at the helm. What a smart man he was. Remains. And this, of course, is why Naspers is the most, it's got the highest market cap in the African continent for any company.
Yeah, it's a trillion rand company, eh?
Amazing.
It's incredible. Yeah.
So what did you want to tell us about?
So we've got results on the 24th of June. I see 10 cents down 3% this morning, which means Naspers is going to be down. But that aside, right, they've got a 63% stake in this Novus business, which is a printing business, which reported last week. And actually, things are really not looking good. The print revenues were down 3%. Again, pressure on this newspaper magazine volume. I mean, like, it's an old story, right?
Right.
Although revenues grew by 17 or just over 17%. And then operating profit was down 2.5%. So in other words, again, the story of you're seeing revenue growth, but your margins are under pressure. So that's the first issue for Naspers and one of the companies they hold. And then there's quite a bit of speculation that Naspers is going to sell their Polish marketplace business called Allegro. It's a business that they bought in 2007 for $1.4 billion, and the current valuation is about $3 billion.
Hmm.
So for Naspers, that's not a huge amount of money. That's the first thing. Although it is positive in my view, because what I think Naspers are doing is they're getting rid of assets that are
not core.
Yes, and not generating as much as they could. So what they could do potentially with this $3 billion that they're going to get from the sale of Allegro is invested in faster growing assets, which is kind of Naspers' business, right? Naspers is no longer a media business. It's a right. private equity business. And so it's all about making return on the cash that they get. And that's kind mm-hmm. of key.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very good point. Media business is a thing of the past.
And I see Amazon are also investing $3 billion in India, which I think bodes well for Naspers because it's the same kind of internet emerging market play. And so what it's telling us really is that there's still lots of potential to grow. And then, well, hopefully Naspers will be able to make good with it.
What do you think their overall strategy is? To just keep bringing in new businesses that will add to their value? Do you think it's to keep looking for opportunities, or do you think that they're also looking to sell a piece of the action?
So I don't think Naspers is a traditional media content business anymore. I actually think really it's a private equity business. And when you're in private equity business, you invest in early stage companies and then hope these companies grow 10-100 fold. The problem with these private equity type businesses is you don't know which one to back. You don't always know which one is going to be the great success story.
Mm.
That's the problem. And invariably, 1 out of 10 succeed and the other 9 don't. And so you just hope that the one that does increases 100-fold while the others, well, there's a couple of billion you've lost and you write it off because you've made money with the one.
Wow. It's that mercenary.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Totally.
All right. Now, let's talk about Ben often does the dickheads of history. Now, we're going to talk this morning about a dickhead of finance.
Mm-hmm.
Who is this guy, this rogue trader, Jerome Kerviel? He sounds pretty awful. Just the name sounds
horrid.
Awful. So who is he?
So Jerome Kerviel in 2007 was a futures trader for SocGen, Societe Generale. And he lost 4.9 billion euros, the biggest amount of money ever lost by a rogue trader.
4.9?
Yeah. So 4.9
billion
euros.
Yo.
So if you convert it to today's rand, that's about 84 billion rand, which is the market cap of Woolworths. He lost an entire Woolworths in a couple of trades.
Now, when we say rogue trader, aren't these guys mostly the ones who end up in jail?
Yes. So he did get convicted. He got 3 years in jail. He has served 5 months, and he got let out with an electronic bracelet after 5 months. He's such
What's he doing now? Is he allowed to get back into trading?
This is the part that's really annoying, right? So he's kind of rogue trader turned saint, and he's now fighting against the financial system because his big thing in the beginning was that actually SocGen knew about his trades, and he said that it wasn't all his fault and he was just the scapegoat. And in fact, last week, the French court awarded him 450,000 euros because they said, in damages, because they said, well, actually SocGen did know about it and they dismissed him unfairly. Based on the amount, I
You lose 4 point, however, billion
call
euros.
Call it 5 billion.
5 billion euros, and you're the victim?
Yeah. He's such a character. So this 450,000 euros that he won was based on the fact that he was unfairly dismissed. But you know, he's such a dickhead.
Tell me why.
Before he went to jail, he met the Pope, apparently.
Oh, yes. Good move. Cleanse then, your sins.
Yes. And right. then did a pilgrimage from Rome to France.
Right. Probably to Lourdes or Nantes or something like that, right?
He's from Brittany, so it's probably like Nantes or something.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
And
I can smell the hypocrisy from a mile away.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I can smell him from here, and he's in France. Mm. All right. So what is he doing?
So, yeah, that's, I don't know, he's just fighting the system, basically. But, you know, there's been a couple of them. One of the other famous ones was a guy called Nick Leeson. And, in fact, I think...
I remember Nick Leeson. Yeah. Didn't he go to jail?
Yes, he did. No. And I think he spent 5 years in jail and also came out, wrote two books. So the first one was called Rogue Trader. The second one was Back to Life or something, or Back from the Brink. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Leeson. And it's the same story. He's now a keynote speaker, although Nick Leeson did get sick. I think he had cancer or something, so a bit of kind of upcomings there.
But this Kerviel guy, he's milking this, huh?
He's the biggest one, yeah.
He's a funny guy.
But you know what's interesting about...
What's he worth now?
Jerome Kerviel?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, has he come out really well?
I think he's done okay.
Because before he went to jail, there was
obviously... He was making lots of money, right?
So he was putting that money in the bank. And so you go to jail for what? How, 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
Please, get out again. You've lost $5 billion for your bank, but it doesn't matter.
Nearly brought the bank to its knees.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Don't worry
Although
about
Nick Leeson did actually bring Barings Bank to its knees. You know, Barings was eventually sold for £1 to somebody. I forget who it was.
£1.
Yeah.
Nice.
But all these guys, the one thing about them that I've noticed, so the top 10, eight of the top 10 were actually futures or options derivatives traders in some shape or form, which I find really intriguing because my background is derivatives trading. And I understand that the banks generally are quite happy to give you enough leeway to say, you know, here's some money, go and capitalize on it, make us as much money as you can off it. And that's what Jerome said. Like SocGen said, well, while he was making lots of profits for them, they were happy with it. But the minute he made a loss, they suddenly turned on him. And so there is a study, actually, that says that looked at derivatives trading and whether or not we should, because you know Warren Buffett called it weapons of mass financial destruction. Derivatives, I'm talking about.
Oh, really?
Now.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the world after 2008 believed that derivatives were this big bad thing and anybody who was a derivatives trader was evil.
Is that when people would look askance at you?
Oh, I've had so many conversations about this. Because after 2008, I went to work for the African Development Bank, where everyone was an angel and a saint, and I was the derivatives trader.
So they hated you. I was bad.
Wow. So this research, though, I just want to say that they did a study that showed that if a company used derivatives, and generally companies use it for hedging, that on average... Companies that did use derivatives, their market cap to book value ratio increased by 6%. So it's not a bad thing. It's just these guys giving derivatives a bad name.
Right.
And that's
rogue
what it is.
Rogue traders.
Indeed.
So now we have Dickheads of History on a Tuesday, and we'll have rogue traders to add to that pile.
Brilliant.
All right. While we're talking about money that can be made and money that can be lost, let's just talk about what might have happened. You see a lot of these companies who... And we've got some time. You see a lot of these companies who are valued at an astronomical amount now. Their market value is enormous. But when they started out, they were cheap as chips. And some of them have gone up by orders of magnitude that we can't even figure and we can't fathom. If we'd invested, for example, $5,000 in Amazon, back at IPO, so 1997, what would that be worth today?
$2 million.
$5,000 becomes $2 million.
Yeah. So should we do a currency exchange? So at the time, the US dollar South African rand rate was 4.67, which means you would have invested 23,000.
Sorry, just hang on a second. Back in 1997, it was 4 rand 67 to the dollar.
Yes.
God, how far we've come.
Everybody got, take a moment to laugh, to breathe. Otherwise you will kill yourself.
That was a nervous laugh.
Tabon Becky and Trevor Manuel, please come back.
All is forgiven, right?
Please. Wow. Okay, so the U.S. dollar to rand rate was 4.67, so that $5,000 was 23,050 rand.
Right.
Okay.
Today, that exchange rate is 15.27. By the way, it's gone badly. You know, on Friday, it weakened by about 3%. So your 23,050 rand would have become 30.5 million rand.
Wow.
And that's in the space of 19 years.
So this is obviously the way to go.
No, hang on a second. Okay. No, you see, this is the problem.
You just hear that kind of rate of return. Do you even know what that rate of return is?
47,000%.
It's not bad.
That's all right.
Thank you, Jeff Bezos.
All right. Now, that's not the way to go, because at the same time that Amazon, that we were having this IT boom, right, there was something called, I forget that pet company. What was it called? Anyway, forget that. And then there was another one called Webvan, which was the grocery delivery business where you shopped online. It was no different from Amazon. What happened to that?
It went bust.
Exactly. So how do you know to have invested in Amazon or Webvan? Which one?
Well, you know what? This is what these venture capitalists were telling us about in Silicon Valley. You've got to look at the team. You've got to look at who's involved.
But Jeff Bezos was a nobody at the time.
That's true. But he might have had the right people around him. He might have had the right ideas. He might have been the kind of impressive person you go, this guy's worth investing money in. And if it was 23,000 rand in those days, and you could be on 30.5 million rand now, you'd have made the right bet. So even if you lost 23,000 rand.
But what if you'd chosen where? Oh, I see. So you're okay with that. You're okay with private equity investments then.
Sure.
So Amazon was up 47,000%, but the NASDAQ, which is the index that they're listed on or is a member of, is only up 300% in the same time. So Amazon is completely an outlier.
Sure. But then, you know, 300%, I'll take those odds too.
Okay. So what about Naspers? We were talking about it early on. So in the same period from 1997 to today, Naspers has increased by 4,500%.
Unbelievable.
But at more, well, I won't say at the same time, because it was slightly before that, Times Media Group had the same market cap as Naspers.
Right.
What if you had invested in that instead of Naspers?
Dead.
Exactly. So how do you know? So there's no way of knowing. And in 1997, Anglo American was much more of a solid company, right? It was the kind of company you wanted to be invested
in.
Sure. Anglo American from 1997 to today, only up 85%. So
they're even lucky to be up, considering what they're in. It's like Edgar's.
Ten years
ago, if I'd said to you, why don't you invest in this tiny little .com business that's going to sell shoes and things online, or you can invest in Edgar's? You'd say Edgar's. That's the smart money, right?
Yeah.
And what
you're buying bricks and mortar.
And what would you be doing now?
Oh yeah,
crying.
Crying. That would be terrible. But you know, Warren Buffett missed out on the IT boom, eh? He did not believe in any of these IT companies. So Warren Buffett is a little bit more my style, kind of, I want to see fundamentals. I want to see cash flow. I want to see that things are solid and on the ground.
Wow.
In fact, Warren Buffett,
you mean
he's
about the second or third richest man in the world, despite not making any money off the dot-coms.
Not being invested in Amazon. Wow. In fact, at the time of the IT boom, he was investing in railway companies. Exactly.
And he still made his money.
There you go.
Okay.
Okay, so what we're trying to do, I have to say this, but what we're trying to do here is not find the one Amazon, what I try to do. Okay, yeah. So there are people who do that.
Right.
Is we try to beat the market. So we try to have a nice diversified portfolio of shares, and then we watch them, you know, and so MTN, we're happy to hold it, except when things happen, go badly, or when the fundamentals change, we sell out and we beat the market, and that's okay. So, okay, we haven't made 47,000%, but we've done better than kind of the Anglos in the 19 years, only up 85%, basically.
Right. So just beat the market and stay safe.
And capital preservation, I think, is very important for people.
Yes. Yeah. No, definitely. You don't want to come out with a loss. Rather, avoid and mitigate risk where you can.
Yeah. And the funny thing about Amazon, you know, they're now going the web van route where they're now suddenly selling groceries and doing home deliveries. And
right. Well, who knows if that's going to go well or not. Maybe they've reached their ceiling.
Oh, dear. Don't say that.
Well, it could be the truth.
It could be.
You know, eventually everything has to reach a point where it's saturated in the market. Maybe that's it for Amazon. I don't know. I mean, it could carry on ad infinitum.
Yeah.
There are places all over the world where they haven't yet discovered Amazon.
Yeah.
I love Amazon. I just hate our post office.
Yeah.
So please, Mark Barnes, can you sort that out?
Fingers crossed, right?
All right, Anthea, that's fascinating stuff. Why don't we look at another company every week that you would have either lost or gained a huge amount of money?
Okay.
In? That would be fun. And let's go back to 94, somewhere around there when the country was just turning. Well, when we celebrated our first sort of democratic elections.
Sure.
Let's see what we can do.
Okay.
It's only 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm. It will be interesting, actually, because we don't really, I mean, because in that time we had the GFC, we had a commodity rout.
No, there was a lot of trauma.
But then there was NASPERS. So.
Yeah, there's some people who've weathered the storm and others who've fallen underfoot. All right, but thank you.
Pleasure.
Excellent. There's Anthea Gardner. A look at your money. And I thought, because when do you go to France again?
September.
Right. And because we were talking about this Jerome
Kerviel,
I thought we'd play you something French to make you feel a little better this morning. Plus, this is the kind of song you can listen to in the rain. When we come back, Mavs has got some news. CliffCentral.com, just after 7. CliffCentral.com.